The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something, and what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of here.
Welcome back to the Mirror Football Podcast with me, Steve Anglesey. As we wait for a mystery gunman in blue to shoot Simon Cowell with an air rifle, I'm joined today by the Daily Mirror's chief football writer, Martin Lipton.
Hello.
And by our football spy transfer expert, Darren Lewis.
Good afternoon.
And later on, we'll be talking to comedian Milton Jones, and we'll be playing another round of Rothman's Roulette. But first, let's start with the transfer window, and particularly with the relegated clubs. Darren Lewis, the football spy. We've seen Charlie Adam linked this week with Manchester United, with Liverpool. Is Charlie Adam really good enough for either of those?
I think, yes, he is. He's shown this season in a poor team that he's able to raise his game and be able to cope with the pressure of performing in the Premier League. It's not for the want of trying. Listen, he's had a hand in many of their goals this season. 55 goals have scored in total, the highest number ever for a team who's been relegated. And even though he's had the problems in January with the protracted move that didn't eventually work out,
and he wanted to go to Liverpool.
Wanted to go to Liverpool, indeed. He was still able to perform at a high level in the second half of the season, and that does indicate to me that he could go to a Manchester United or a Liverpool and perform effectively. Whether he would be high profile enough for Manchester United fans is another matter, considering that they've been linked with the likes of Luka Modric and Wesley Schneider. But certainly for Liverpool, I think he would fit into what Kenny Dalglish is trying to do, because he's trying to assemble a team, where possible, of British players who really do buy into what Liverpool are all about. And he's also trying to get that creativity from midfield that they've been lacking. And obviously, they did well in the second half of the season without Steven Gerrard. But I think a Charlie Adam in the side could really give them a little bit of that X factor that they've been missing. So, yeah, I think he would be a good signing for them.
I think he actually is a Manchester United supporter, isn't he? And quite a keen Manchester United supporter. I don't know whether that's any block, but he certainly seemed keen on going to Liverpool in January. Martin, are you in the Charlie Adam business? Do you think he wouldn't start for Manchester United, surely?
He wouldn't start for either club, actually. I don't think he's actually that good. He's a decent player, he's one great season, right? He is a quarterback, basically. That's what he does. He hits great 40, 50, 60 yard balls. But that's for a counter-attacking team, which Blackpool were. Liverpool are not a counter-attacking team. They'll be playing 4-4-2 with Suarez and Cowell presumably up front. You'll have Coit on the right, you'll have Gerrard in the middle, you'll have somebody, maybe Maxi or whomever, left. You can't have another attack-minded midfielder. One has to be defence-minded. At the moment, that's Lucas. Adam doesn't get into that team. He certainly doesn't get into a United
team.
So
why would Kenny Dalglish be interested in
that? Was Dalglish interested?
Yes.
At the time?
Yes.
I don't think he's interested now. Things have changed. They changed their focus, didn't they?
No, but he was interested.
But I think that was they weren't going to buy Cowell at that point. They've changed
My point is, if Dalglish was able to sign him in January, he would have done. So quite clearly in January, he would have been good enough for Liverpool. What's changed? I think we're disparaging about Adam because of who he is and who he plays for, and I think we don't give him enough credit.
I think he's a decent
I think he's a great player.
Well, I don't go that far. I think he's a decent player. But he's also, his level is not a top six team. He's just below that. I think he's an Aston Villa player, maybe.
Nobody is saying that he would walk into either team. But what I'm saying is that I could see him go into one of those teams and perform. And I would stand by that. I think he's performed consistently this season. And I think the mark of a decent player is that when all of the pressure and everything's going on around you, can you still actually go onto the pitch and produce?
I think he's played very well this season. I'm not dismissing that at all. I just don't think that he's the type of player who suits either of those clubs the way they play. He is suited to a counter-attacking team, a team that doesn't have much of the ball. So when he gets the ball and plays that early pass, and that's what he's good at, there's space for his team to exploit. United don't play that way. They have the ball. They have 60% of the ball most of the time. They don't play counter-attack. Liverpool, again, tend to have, particularly at home, loads of the ball. They don't play counter-attack. Dalglish's team have always dominated possession. That's what he tries to do. Mm. I mean, what he did with Blackburn was slightly different because he had flying wingers, but the two central midfielders, which we were talking about, Adam, were hard-working grafters. They weren't surveyors of the ball. He did Batty and people like that in there. You know, it was not that sort of team, and I can't see that Adam fits into a Dalglish blueprint of what a side. If he's starting and building a team, which he has the chance to do over the summer, rather than inheriting a team and needing to improve it quickly, I don't think that Adam fits that.
All I'm saying is that, you know, we have our views here, but the facts are that Dalglish made an approach for him. So Dalglish clearly felt that he would be able to contribute to Liverpool. And I think if he was good enough in January, then why could he not be good enough at the very least to be part of the Liverpool squad? Nobody is suggesting for 1 minute that he would walk into a team ahead of Steven Gerrard or anyone else. But I think that if Dalglish was interested in him because he was good enough for Liverpool in January, I think he would be good enough now.
Okay, the other side of this coin, I guess, and we're going to be saying the same kind of things about this guy, but this guy has been tried and tested, really, is Scott Parker, obviously. Now, who are the suitors for Scott Parker? We hear Arsenal, don't we? But they can't make up their mind. We hear Spurs. We've heard Liverpool again, maybe. I don't think we've heard United yet. We've heard Manchester City, who are obviously linked with you, me, everybody else. Where's Scott Parker going to end up, Martin?
If I had to pick a team, it'd be Tottenham. Just because Redknapp wants him. I'm not sure that the club want him. I'm not sure that Levy wants him, but I think Redknapp has made it clear that he does. One of the reasons the club might not want him is because Sandro has emerged as a top player.
Was excellent towards the end.
What you do have is how he likes to have players he trusts more than many managers, and he thinks that. And I think Scott was a standout player by a million miles at West Ham this year. I think he's finally at last getting a deserved run in the England team, and I hope that continues because I think he's a super professional in every sense. He's also a decent bloke, and he could play in a top four team. It didn't work for him at Chelsea, but that was because of the injuries when they came, and he was a bit unfortunate. He's a better player now than he was then. I think he understands himself and his game better than he did 6 or 7 years ago. I can see him being a success wherever he goes.
Darren, I mean, you were umming and ahhing at the idea of Spurs there.
Well, only because West Ham want £10 million for him, and Scott Parker's 30 years old, and I can't see Daniel Levy, as Martin knows, paying £10 million for a 30-year-old footballer. Scott Parker is a leader, and Spurs don't have as many leaders as they would like.
And no one's going to pay £10 million for Scott
Parker. But nobody's going to do that.
It's the fancy world of Sullivan and Gold, isn't it? Reality is, they've got to have to shift him because they can't afford to keep him on these wages. So he's going to go. The question is, how high a price can they get? I'd be amazed if they get more than six.
Well, and that's the other thing, of course, and you're right there, Martin, is that they've got to do right by him because he could have left last year, and it looked very much as though he would leave last year, and he signed a new deal, and he said, I'll stay. And he tried to keep them up, and he played through some very difficult circumstances. I remember he played through the pain barrier. He injured his shoulder, and he played in the win against Liverpool. He played even after losing his father this season. Scott Parker's given a lot to West Ham this season, and I don't think they could really hold him to ransom and price him out of a move, given what he's contributed to them this season. I think he would fit in well to Spurs, but as Martin said, Sandro has emerged to be a top player this season, and I think he'll go from strength to strength. They still like Huddleston as well. You've also got to factor in that you've got to play Van der Vaart and you've got to play Modric as well. So I don't think it would be as easy to fit Scott Parker into the Tottenham side as many people suggest. I think Arsenal need a Scott Parker. They need somebody like him who's going to drive forward from midfield, who is going to keep going when others have cried off.
There's no way of going to Arsenal.
I think he needs
an Arsenal.
But he won't go to Arsenal.
He's English and he's over 25. Yes. There's no way Wenger will sign him.
Well, Wenger has said He's gone on record as saying, I will be very active in the transfer market. And there is some suggestion that he is indeed. But there is some suggestion that he is going to target British players. Now, they've been linked very much with Stuart Downing, for example, at Aston Villa.
Yeah. Who said that he's not going to sign his new contract. He's got 2 years left, but he's obviously going to go.
Absolutely. And I just think he would be a good player. Parker alongside Wilshere is possibly the Euro 2012 midfield for next summer.
If it was anybody other than Arsene Wenger,
it would be a no-brainer, wouldn't it?
I still don't think that Wenger really likes English players that he can't craft from the very beginning himself.
I think you're being unfair to Wenger. I mean, Wenger has gone for English players. Francis Jeffers, Richard Wright, Jermaine Pennant,
and those
Matthew Upson. You know, he has invested in English players,
but they haven't delivered.
And that's what
they?
I'm saying. That only reinforces the view in his mind that unless he's been able to mould them from the very beginning, as he has with Wilshere, or it's an exceptional bargain, as it was with Campbell, which was a free transfer... Right. He doesn't think it's worthwhile spending the money on them. He's not convinced it's going to work out. Parker is now, let's be fair, 30. Mm. He's not going to learn too many new tricks.
Mm. But the only thing I would say to that is that if you're going to sign a Parker, you say to him, look, he was given a 5-year contract by West Ham, which was obviously lunacy, but I think as far as Parker's concerned, you bring him in, you say, you're not going to get the deal that you were on at West Ham. You're not going to get the money you were on at West Ham. What's your ambition like? Do you want to come here and play in the Champions League? Do you want to come here and play regularly in what will be a good team? Because obviously there'll be other players Arsenal go for. They're very much in for the Lille winger, Eden Hazard, who's a player of the year in France, won the title last Saturday. They're very much in for Gervinho, the right winger at Lille. I think Lille are going to have no players left by the time Arsenal finish with them.
Absolutely.
So they're going to be very active with some good players this summer. A lot of players will go out and they will reshape Arsenal. Arsene Wenger will reshape Arsenal. And that's why I think Scott Parker, I wouldn't dismiss it as many people are doing. I think he would be a good player for Arsenal. Danielson obviously will leave as well, so that will reduce their midfield options even further.
And that's another
reason why I think Parker would be in a mix for Arsenal. Liverpool, don't rule them out too. We're talking about British players. Kenny Dalglish likes him very much too. But if you were to ask me, and I know people may not disagree, I see him going to Arsenal. Mm. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal would be. I can see him with Wilshere as he will be with England and everything else. I don't know. Maybe there is some kind of swap with Liverpool, and they send Joe Cole back there to try and rebuild something. But obviously, they would never pay Joe Cole.
Can I just say as well, from Joe Cole's point of view, I think it would be. Wherever he goes, he shouldn't go anywhere near West Ham. Not because I want to be disparaging towards West Ham, but I just think in PR terms it would be a horrendous fall from grace for Joe Cole to go from a club of the stature of Liverpool to go to a Championship club, any Championship club. I think if he goes anywhere else, he's got to stay in the Premier League.
Well, I mean, also, it would be a huge gamble for Joe Cole, because if it confirms here what we suspect about Joe, unfortunately, then that's it, game over for Joe Cole. Just quickly, our colleague David Anderson is reporting today that Liverpool are going to bid £10 million for Scott Dan. Is that good business for you, Martin?
I think it's excellent business for Liverpool because he's an absolutely top class defender. Really is. He's far better than people realise. I think Johnston is a good defender, but when he plays with Dan, he looks a really good defender because Dan makes him better. You could argue that Dan's injuries cost Birmingham because they would have stayed up with him.
Dan's actually got better, hasn't he, since he's been injured.
Really, look how few goals they conceded throughout the season anyhow. If Dan had still been there, they'd have stayed up. It's as simple as that. Yeah. And he's a top player. He needs to move on to the next stage. I think he might have left Birmingham in any event this summer because people were looking at him, and rightly so.
I totally agree with Martin. And I would say it's wonderful to see this summer almost the resurgence of the British player. You know, there are lots of people looking like Gary Cahill's of this world as well. And even Roger Johnson.
Yeah, they're the kind of sought-after ones.
These are the sought-after players. I mean, you know, in the past, everyone would be looking at your sort of foreign players in the not mistaken, I wouldn't say, but in the belief that, you know, maybe they could add that X factor, if you like, to your team. But now people are looking at the tried and trusted, the players who know the Premier League, who have been there and seen it and done it. And I do think Scott Dan, Scott, Parker. Scott Dann would be a good signing. I don't know about an excellent signing, because you can never tell how a player can cope with a jump from, let's face it, a relegation team.
Martin Skrtel started every game in the league for Liverpool this season. I've no doubt about Scott Dann going there.
He's got to be an uptake on Skrtel. I agree.
That's fair.
I mean, other guys that, from those relegated clubs that we think are going to be prized, I mean... Ben Foster for me.
Not for me.
Have a look at Vaughan at Blackpool. Good player.
Vaughan's the first name I've got on the list. Yeah, really good. Yeah, Sebastian Larsen, Birmingham, now set. I mean, he's a Fulham, Sunderland type player, isn't he? A squad
we
player.
We all know the obvious ones from West Ham, Carlton Cole, Demba Ba. Everyone's fighting over him. Yeah. Everton, Aston Villa in for him.
Blackburn. Final taker as well.
Well, they've offered him a new contract. They're hoping he'll stay, and they're hoping that he'll show them some loyalty, because they stuck by him while he was injured.
6 months, yeah,
absolutely. So they're hoping that he will stay.
Ridgewell at Birmingham as well might have a few takers. Yeah, yeah. Left back, centre half.
Roger Johnson, do we think?
I think Roger Johnson would be off. Foolish not to have a look at him, because you're probably getting quite cheap. That's the thing, because they're going to have to sell. They are in serious financial trouble.
Serious financial trouble, exactly. Yeah. And I think from that point of view, they've got no option but to look to sell.
Okay, well, there's plenty more to come from Darren Lewis in the weeks ahead as his Football Spy video series returns. So look out for that on mirrorfootball.co.uk. And now it's my great pleasure to be joined on the phone by Milton Jones. Familiar, of course, from Radio 4 and from Mock the Week. The guy with the hair and the shirt, as he was described to me by someone in the office this morning. I think that sums it up, doesn't it, Milton?
Yeah, people don't remember my name. They at least remember what I look like. That's
absolutely.
Plan, anyway.
Absolutely. Now, born in Kew to a Welsh family, and you live in Richmond. So, with a pedigree like that, I'm guessing that you support Manchester United. Is this the case?
Yeah. That will play for the Republic of Ireland, but no, I don't support Manchester United. It's quite the opposite. I support Arsenal. So yes, it hasn't been the greatest season.
I was going to say. So how has that been for you? It's not been too exciting, has it?
Well, it's deja vu, isn't it? It's been the last 5 years or so of 1 week of the year, the whole pie collapses inward. And we go out of the Champions League, tripping everything in one week. And I can't bear to watch the last month of football. And it's been very frustrating, because you know what he's like. He goes on about character and heart all the time. But it's sort of protesting too much. I think that's the one thing we haven't got. And we need a few Range Rovers in there instead of all these Ferraris.
It would be nice if he bought some characters with heart, wouldn't it? Instead of some, you know, some 17-year-old Frenchman, as the great cliche goes. As the great cliche goes, as the not so great cliche goes. Can you see him actually dipping into his pocket this summer, or into the owner's pocket and buying some players, or do you think it's going to be the same again?
Well, I think he will, but as you say, it will be some second division French player, even if he's a big tank that no one's ever heard of. A bit like Koscielny or something. I mean, not that he was big, but, you know, that kind of... he seems to love a bargain. I'd probably see him go around Poundland, where he lives, looking for stuff. And, you know, he's done well. You know, he's been great, but I think he's also a very stubborn man and won't give in to public pressure, just, you know, because... people are getting on his back, and he would never have bought Torres, even if he had the money, for instance.
Absolutely. I think the Poundland analogy is a good one. I can see him buying at Tesco's, totally eschewing the finest range and going for the sort of unripened tomatoes, so ones that you can leave at home to ripen later on, you know?
Yes, French toast sort of past its sell-by date.
Well, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. The great Ryan Giggs farrago, have you been amused by that this week?
Well, was there anyone who didn't know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we all thought it was Luke Chadwick. I've got to say, that's not true, Luke. If Luke Chadwick is listening, that is not true. Legally, I'm obliged to say that. But yeah, there was no one left in the country who didn't know this, right?
No, it's very odd. I mean, at some point, though, it must have got... he's just got embarrassing for him to keep on doing it, hasn't it? I mean... goodness, his family must know. Everyone knows. And presumably he's throwing money at it as well. I don't know. He must be living in a sort of denial of some sort. And now it'd be interesting to see what happens to his career now, you know, whether it he's got a year left, and or whether this is sort of what people might remember him for, which is tragic.
It is really, because he's been such a great player, you know, and he's had a great season as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, was it last year he won the one of the Player of the Year things? And,
yeah, and he was Sports Personality of the Year, right?
And, I mean, it's not a surprise that all that business goes on. It's just he hasn't handled it. It's not in his favour that he's handled it this way.
Are there a lot of super injunctions in the comedy world? You know, have you got a few out against?
No, it works the other way. In fact, they're sort of badges of honour, these things, and people go out of their way to lie to say that such things happen. So it's completely the other way around. It's not about testing positive for drugs. It's making sure you can find some.
Tell me about your amateur football team, Milton, which I believe, I don't know how regularly you get together, but I believe you play with a few sort of reasonably big, they're big names, aren't they?
Well, so, yes, not very good footballers, but big names. I mean, the comedians, such as they are, and when they're around, sort of get together on a Tuesday and have a kick about, and it's, you know, people like Lee Mack and Daniel Kitson and depending who's around, you know, John Bishop's turned up and lots of people who are sort of coming through the ranks and Ian Stone and, you know, there's a lot of people around on a Tuesday when they're not working, and we just get together and have a kick about, and it's a good laugh. There are about 7 running commentaries, as you can imagine, which are all quite funny, and the standard is gloriously low. In fact, someone took a video of it once. It was just lots of blokes standing about pointing. There wasn't much running going on at all. But, it's a good laugh, and it's one of those games that always ends up 16-15, you know, a sort of playground match. And we usually play for about 2 hours and make fun of each other. But it's one of the few times you can actually just switch off and think about something else apart from comedy.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen clips of Bishop playing. He looks quite good. The one I can't get my head round on that list is Daniel Kitson, who, to be fair, does not look like a traditional footballer. Yeah,
yeah, he needs the ball to feet, and he's not hugely pacey, but he's one of those players that you try and go round, but it's quite a long way. So he sometimes sticks his foot in. He's sort of awkward rather than good. And he's one of the running commentary guys. You know, there's a total, a lot of sledging going on from that department.
Very good. And what's your role? Are you midfield schemer? Are you at the back?
Yeah, well, years ago I started out on the wing, and I'm gradually working my way backwards. I just about can play for a half game in midfield now, and then I sort of played right wing most of my park playing days. And I see myself as a sort of ageing Trevor Stephen, if that means anything to you.
Oh, yes, it certainly does, yeah.
Or Merson, maybe. In some ways, but not always.
Well, yeah, let's hope some of the refueling habits are...
Well, that would fit in, actually, with the whole...
Well, it would have done. And also, you know, Merson did, back in the cocaine days, he did like a loud shirt as well, so, you know...
Oh, did he? Oh,
very much so, yeah, very much so. Yeah. Lots of a sort of brocade waistcoat and a sort of Hawaiian-style shirt was often rocked by the Merse back in the day. Are there a lot of people on the comedy circuit who you can talk about football with? I'm always stunned when I go to comedy clubs that not many comedians do football jokes, I guess, to sort of you know, avoid losing half of the room or a third of the room.
Yeah, because you do lose, you know, the female part usually. And if you're speaking about... Because jokes are usually at the expense of people or things, you lose whoever supports that person.
Right, yeah.
So you're talking about less than half the room being on your side if you do that kind of a joke. I haven't said that. I've got a gag in my show at the moment that the match I'd really like to see is Alex Ferguson's Manchester United versus North Korea's Arsenal. And that usually goes down in the right. But it didn't go down too well in Manchester, to be honest.
Favourite football moments of this season, apart from Arsenal or at Arsenal or whenever?
Yeah, well, there are not many at Arsenal, are there? There was always that moment, that sort of, what's it called these days? The cup we lost. Was it Rumbelow's Milk Cup?
Yeah, the Carling Cup, yeah.
Carling Cup, that's it. That moment where it ricocheted off Chesney's knee straight to Martins. That
absolutely,
was kind of like
yeah.
the worst possible moment of the whole season. In terms of best, probably it's got to be Rooney's overhead kick, isn't it?
Well, I support Manchester City, so no.
No, that was the worst. Yeah, sorry.
Yes, that was, I think that's what you meant to say.
A lucky shinning
yes,
of the ball.
Yes, right off his shin, but it was a great goal.
Yeah.
It was a really great goal.
I'm trying to think what other good goals there have been there. I'm not sure there have been... I don't think it's been a vintage season particularly. I think you've got the top four teams not firing on all cylinders, and Man U had the best squad in the end.
I think that's a very astute summation. Yeah. I think it did just come down to that squad strength and unity and having done it so many times before. Before we let you go, Milton, tell me about the cows. What are you doing? Why are you standing in a field bothering cows?
Well, yeah, and then there was this advert that I did as well. someone came to me, Laughing Cow Cheese came to me and said, do you want to do this advert? And I said, oh, I don't know about that. And then I thought about it, why not? And it ended up being on my birthday, standing in a field with a load of cows doing gags at them. I mean, it sort of supplied a great PR image because it was a nice day. And it was literally three people were employed to corral a load of cows around the stage. And of course, when I got onto the stage, we'd set a PA up and everything, and they all stampeded off in the opposite direction. So he had to corral them all up again, and I'd come on. It was all filmed. It's all on their Facebook page. It's all me going, so how are you doing? Over the moon, are you? And, you know, loads of really cheesy cow-based material, and trying not to say mention butchers or stuff. And the arc of the stuff that we did was, like, some cow jokes, then some jokes about other... You know, who's in from the field over there and who's trying to, any hens in, you know, trying to mirror the same sort of thing as a comedy club. I suppose I've played to worse animals over the years as well. But they sort of, I think maybe they just got used to the sound of my voice because at first they were really scared. But then they sort of, they seemed to be... Well, I don't liking it. You don't see them laugh out loud.
Well, no, they can't applaud, can they?
No, they'd fall flat on their faces. but they did seem to get more used to me anyway. And it seems good. They even had an animal behaviourist on hand to see if there was any change in what they were doing.
If you were disturbing the cat. And was there any change in what they were doing?
Yes. I mean, it's difficult to... I mean, he said there was. And whether it's just me soothing them into feeling less like they need to stampede, I don't know. But...
Lulling them before a trip to a date with the bolt gun, presumably.
I tried not to mention World of Leather or anything like that.
All that can be seen at facebook.com/TheLaughingCowUK. That's all one word. Facebook.com/TheLaughingCowUK. Milton Jones, gentleman and a scholar, thank you very much for joining us on the Mirror Football Podcast.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for your help.
Now let's turn our attentions to the Champions League final. Martin Lipton, Gary Lineker gives Manchester United 20% chance of victory on Saturday. Is that too harsh, too generous?
Well, I'd have said 30%. So Barcelona, if they play, are better. There's no point pretending otherwise. Everyone knows it, including Alex Ferguson. However, if United can play as they did against Schalke, particularly as they did against Chelsea in the league game, then they've got a shout. They've got a genuine shout because they are going to ask questions of Barcelona that nobody has asked this season. And that gives them a puncher's chance, as simple as that. But they can punch really, really hard. They've got penetration down the flank with Valencia. They've got Rooney dropping into space and able to cause all sorts of problems. They've got the movement of Hernandez, who clearly worries Barcelona. Having been out there this week and talking to their players, they are worried about Hernandez. They think he's a real threat to them. The energy levels of Park, which, as we know, are phenomenal. Two absolutely outstanding centre-halves if they're both fit, and they appear to be at the moment. And a goalkeeper playing his last game of football. You know, what better way for Van der Sar then? I think that if I had to put any of your money on it, Steve, I'd put it on Barcelona. And I think that had Fergie done what he was initially tempted to do, which is go 4-5-1 with Rooney on his own up top, Barcelona would have won 2-0. The way he's going to play, Barcelona could win 5-0. yes. United could win 2-1.
Because it could. If they, with the two strikers, it does. I mean, the midfield is almost conceded, isn't it? And you are really looking.
You've just got to get lucky.
You are really looking to get lucky, yeah. On the flanks. I totally agree with you. There is something about this game. I mean, Manchester United are not 3-1 in a two-horse race. That's incredible. It's yeah, an exactly. incredible state. That not happened for a reason. But when you think of those three, well, it's four Champions League finals, isn't it? But if you think of the three Champions League finals, they've not played well in any of those games, have they?
No, they had the first half hour against Chelsea, and then was Ballack ran the game.
Correct,
thereafter.
Yeah.
They had the last minute against Bayern Munich, having been outplayed for 92, and they had the first 9 minutes
against Barcelona,
and then Eto'o scored, and they didn't see the ball again other than the kick-off. They're bound to get it right one
exactly.
day.
Exactly, they've got to play well.
There is the argument that Fergie only gets it right when he gets it completely wrong. You know, it's like when he tries to be simple, it works. Mm. When he tries to be clever, it doesn't work.
Yeah, as he did in 99.
If he goes with 4-4-1-1, their best shape with their best team, that's being simple. Mm. It might not work, but it gives them the best chance of winning.
How did they win this game, Darren?
You know, I really don't know, because I think in Barcelona we're seeing one of the great footballing teams of our time, and I think we've had a week's build up, so obviously people will indeed be looking at ways that Manchester United can win it, but I can't see anything other than a Barcelona victory. I just think they've got goals from Messi, but not only do they have goals from Messi, but he works harder than people give him credit for. They've got industry in midfield, they keep the ball so well. If they take an early lead, it's going to be so hard for Manchester United, because Barca will keep the ball and Manchester United will have to press to find it, and I think that will help Barcelona to be able to find gaps in the Manchester United defence. The stats are in Manchester United's favour. They've conceded only 4 goals in their 12 games in the Champions League so far, but Barcelona have just got goals coming
Messi
out.
Messi scored 11 on his own, hasn't he?
Absolutely. It is incredible, and I think as far as that's concerned, Barcelona will... Their record in London isn't so good, in England isn't so good, and that also could be something that Manchester United could cling to. But I just think Barcelona keep the ball so well. I think they've got that confidence about them and that belief in what they can do. I must say, people don't want Manchester United to go defensive, but when I saw them play at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid, I don't think they found it as easy to get parts. Until Real Madrid had a player sent off,
at the end.
Barcelona weren't getting through very easily. Indeed, they had chances. I'm not going to deny that, but they weren't finding it very easy. And I'd like to see Manchester United go defensive and really keep it tight and see if they can nick something on a set piece.
If you do that, you lose 2-0. I think
that's it. It's almost damage limitation, yeah. Isn't it?
If you go toe-to-toe with one of the best footballing sides in the world,
but I think
there is more chance of that happening than if you keep it tight and try and get a set piece, get a Vidic and Ferdinand are so good from set pieces, you may be able to get a dead ball situation just outside. I think set pieces are Manchester United's best chance, because I just can't see them going toe-to-toe with Barcelona and winning.
If you've got Mascherano and Piqué at centre-half, Piqué's a good player, but Mascherano is not.
It's not a good
player.
Yeah, I agree with that. Puyol,
who's a centre-half playing at left-back, when you've got Valencia matched up against him, you know that Alves will spend his entire time bombing down your right.
Absolutely.
A great big hole.
But that is a good point. But let me
and
put,
look at Chelsea. Look,
but let me put
Chelsea
this to you. Mascherano played centre-half for Barcelona when they played Real Madrid. You know,
they had
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, but they never
Cristiano
got the ball.
Exactly, they couldn't get the ball. That's exactly what I'm saying. And there was nobody in the Manchester United team of the caliber of Cristiano Ronaldo. But he just couldn't get the ball because Barcelona kept it so well, and that's the problem
But I think if you cede the ball and cede territory, you're going to end up just getting beaten by them. You've got and the one thing you don't want to do is to lose 2-0, not having had a go.
And
I think that Ferguson also believes that this will enshrine him.
I think the hand of history and all that will dictate that he will have a go.
I see all of that heart-rending stuff.
Back
at
Wembley,
crying my
like
stuff.
In 68.
Exactly, you know, I feel as I need to shed a tear myself. But the facts are that when you get to this stage, you actually want to win it. Nobody looks at... What we want to see is a spectacle. Now, I think that the match is almost a hostage to that, because Manchester United go into it needing to do what they have to do to win. That's all that matters. You know, I remember Arsenal winning the FA Cup in 2006 against Manchester United, and the game was shocking. And Manchester and Arsenal, it was 4-5-1, and they played. It was awful to watch, but they won, and that's
the
what matters most.
The only thing that gravitates towards that, as I said, I think if Fletcher had been fit, it was more likely they would go that way. And you look at the 2008 semi-final, where they get a 0-0 when they should have done better away. And at home, they're absolutely battered, United. I mean, Barcelona dominate from start to finish. Scholl scores from 25 yards, and it's just heroic defending by Wes Brown, of all people, who played on that night as well as he's ever played. And the sound of Old Trafford was louder than I've ever known. Yeah. It was a remarkable night there. And that might have been very much in Ferguson's thoughts then. But without Fletcher, they've got nobody with that energy apart from Park. And if you put Park inside, if a nanny left from that basis, you'll get exposed. He doesn't do the tracking back. So you end up having to accommodate what you've got. And I think that's why he'll pick the team. I think he goes, which is Valencia, Carrick, Giggs, Park.
No nanny. Nanny not starting. Do you sacrifice Park and just put him on Messi? Can he do that job?
No, you don't, because then you just leave Alves or Iniesta or Xavi or what. You've just got to get him to win the ball.
It's pick your poison, isn't it, really? Yeah. A score prediction?
2-1 to
Barcelona. 2-1, Martin?
No matter how they play, 2-0 Barcelona. 2-0
Barcelona.
After all that.
Well, we'll see. Okay, now it's time for our Name the Team game, Rothman's Roulette. Playing today are Martin Lipton and Darren Lewis, but first, a recap of the rules.
These are the rules of Rothman's Roulette. 1. We flick through an old copy of Rothman's and give our panellists the details of a famous match from football history. We're looking for them to name as many starting players as they can from one of the competing teams on that day. 2. The panellists bid on how many players they can name. They can either choose to outbid their opponent or tell him to name his players. 3. If the panellist gets all his names right, he gets 1 point. If he gets just one name wrong, his opponent gets a point. 4. There are 3 rounds in each Rothman's Roulette, and the first to 2 points wins.
You're the Daily Mirror, aren't you? Can't you stop them?
You're playing Rothman's Roulette.
And our match today took place on the 27th of May 2009, when Barcelona beat Manchester United 2-0 to win the Champions League. Martin Lipton, how many starters from that Barca lineup can you name? Now, if you get one wrong, the point goes to Darren, obviously.
Okay. I'll go 7 then.
He can name 7. Darren, any advance on 7?
I'm going to go. So I can't go. Obviously, can't go 7.
You can't go under. this is the bidding process.
All right. I'll go 8.
You can go 8.
Go on then.
He's going to go 8. So if you get one wrong, the point goes to Martin.
So this is from 2009.
This is the 2009, the Barcelona side.
Okay. Well, obviously Messi. Obviously Xavi, Iniesta.
So we've got Messi. We've got Iniesta.
I should have gone 8, actually.
You've got Xavi.
I forgot Messi. Unbelievable.
You've got
obviously
3.
Obviously Puyol.
We've got Puyol, correct.
And
he was the captain. And not Alves. The trap is sprung, I'm afraid. Silvinia.
Alves had moved from Sevilla by
injured.
Then.
He's injured. Missed the game.
Puyol at right back. Silvinio at left back. Obviously Valdez. Yaya Touré and Piqué with the centre backs.
I would have got Yaya Touré.
Busquets,
correct.
Eto up front.
And then Eto and Henri up front. Okay, so that's 1 point to Martin Lipton without doing anything. This is very dangerous. And so, Martin, it's your turn to bid now.
His turn to bid, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sorry, it's your turn to start the bidding, Darren. And it's the Manchester United team that night. So you have to name how many of the 11 starters can you name?
Okay, Rooney.
Well, how many? No, you've got to do the bidding.
How many can you bid? I'm going to go 5.
You can do 5.
I'll go 6 then.
He's going to go 6. Darren? Do you want to go 7? I think you're probably going to need to go 7.
Yeah, I'll go 7.
Martin, can you do 8?
Yeah, I can do 8.
All right, you go.
Right, Rooney, obviously.
Is 1.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Is 2.
Evra.
Evra is 3.
Ferdinand.
Is four.
Vidic.
Five.
Van der Sar.
Is six.
Giggs.
Seven.
And one more.
One more. This is where it starts to get interesting, yeah.
Park.
Park, yes, of course, who was subbed off on 66 minutes, and that, this is why I worry about Park. You know, he's great, but he, in that game he was, that was that's probably the worst game I've ever seen him play.
I'm trying to work out who right back was. I'm gonna, I guess Gary Neve, but
it was O'Shea.
Right,
O'Shea. It was O'Shea, and the other one were Carrick and the other central midfielder.
Anderson.
Was Anderson, that's right. It was Anderson who was to hold off at half time, wasn't he? Okay, well, that'll do it. Martin Lipton is the victor, as we suspected. Thank you very much to Martin Lipton. Thank you very much to Darren Lewis. We'll be back here next week. Thank you for listening.
The Daily Mirror calls on you.
Football is about nothing unless it's about something. And what it is about.
I am going to get 100% out of you.
Thank you for downloading this podcast, a Mirror Digital production. The Mirror Football Podcast theme music is the cunningly titled Football by the band Peers. That's P-E-E-R-S. Check them out at myspace.com/wearepeers. myspace.com/wearepeers.